I'm Peter Cavoli, and I'm going to try to set things up over the next 10 to 12 minutes for Adam, who's really going to present the more interesting work that we've been doing on evaluating access and timely access in primary care. And some of the things I'm presenting are just background that many of you already know, and hopefully will just be a setup for what he's going to be talking about. So I'm going to go fairly quickly so that we can get to the more interesting work. So our objectives for today are to review current metrics for timely access in VHA and the private sector for primary care, describe the intent and definition of the same-day access metric in VHA, and propose new methods for measuring timely care. So as far as the definition of access, this is a definition that was proposed in 1993 that was fairly specific about, timely use of personal health services. Some work that we did a number of years ago through the VA came up with a new definition that said access to care represents the potential ease of having virtual or face-to-face interactions with a broad array of healthcare providers, including clinicians, caregivers, peers, and computer applications. And we broke that down into actual, which represents those directly observable and objectively measurable dimensions of access, and perceived, which represent those self-reported and subjective dimensions of access. And in this paper, we outlined a set of specific dimensions that characterize the fit between the patient and the healthcare system. So as healthcare has evolved, there's been less of a focus on patient-to-provider face-to-face encounters. And the VA has obviously been a pioneer in that because the private sector, as you all know, billing is driven primarily by a face-to-face visit and difficult to bill for non-face-to-face encounters. That's changing slowly in the private sector, but not anywhere near what is in the VA. So we have these perceived or subjective measures of access and then actual or objective measures. And of the dimensions that we came up with, temporal was one of the key dimensions. And in the model that we developed, and see my highlighting actually probably doesn't look very good on the screen, but it's supposed to be a highlight over the temporal part of this, where it can be measured in time to get a next appointment or waiting time or just the convenience of time for the patient. This also came up recently in an Institute of Medicine report called Transforming Health Care Scheduling and Access. This was this came out in the wake of the Phoenix issues at the VA, and they had, I think, a very important point in here. They said the IOM report Crossing the Quality Chasm identified six fundamental aims for healthcare: that it be safe, effective, patient-centered, efficient, equitable, and timely. Of these fundamental aims, timeliness is in some ways the least well studied and understood. And I think many of you that are familiar with what happened in Phoenix, there was a lot of misunderstanding there. And if we had had better measures and a better understanding of what timely care was, I think much of that could have been averted. So a few different ways to measure care depend on the perspective. So I'm going to give a brief review of a number of perspectives and sort of talk about what the problems are with them. And, ultimately by the end, hopefully we've come up with some better ways to measure timeliness. So in the VA, if you go from the patient perspective, there's an attempt to have, initially it was called the patient preferred date, then became the desired date. Not just that point to how long the patient has to wait from when they desire to have an appointment. Now, the problem with that is patients don't always know the urgency of their issues. So it can swing both ways. One, that they will put off care that needs to be moved up sooner, or they will perceive that they need care sooner than is medically indicated. From a provider perspective, there was an attempt to do the clinically indicated date, or the CID, and from that point to the appointment date. The biggest problem with that as a provider, and those of you that are providers on the phone know this, when you put in the clinically indicated date, well, it depends on a lot of things and also depends on the patient's schedule. So it asks you to put in a single date as opposed to just a date range of saying, well, within 3 months or within 6 months. And so the default for a lot of providers is just to default it to today or tomorrow and then have the scheduler schedule it whenever is next available. From the schedulers, there's the create date to the appointment date, but that doesn't allow for what the wait time is. I'm sorry, what the wait is based on the patient preference. In the market, I'm going to talk briefly about use of basically a secret shopper type phone call that gets at, you know, calling the clinic and saying how long until the next visit. The problem with that is it's time intensive and time is money, and so you got to have funds to be able to do that sort of work. And an industry standard, and we'll talk briefly about the pros and cons of Third Next Available, but one of the biggest problems is that it requires access to a scheduling grid. It depends on whether it's your own provider or any provider, and it doesn't work at all when you have open access because you can have a Third Next Available of zero or one day, but does that represent, you know, the timeliness of care? So another way that was the VA has looked at access management is through the systematic review that was performed at RAND. And what they did was review the literature, found about 50 pubs, about 29 assessed primary care access interventions. And they had five key questions. So the first question is, what definitions and measures of intervention success are used, and what evidence supports use of these definitions and measures? And the overwhelming majority use Third Next Available, and that has a fair number of issues, especially for the VA. There was some look at continuity and patient satisfaction, but in the end, none of them were linked to health outcomes. So why was Third Next Available, or why is it currently being used frequently? Well, one is it's more stable than other choices like First Available, and that's one of the things people argue for. From a paper that Don Berwick wrote a number of years ago, it said this statistic is used to measure the number of days a patient has to wait to get an appointment. The TNA is featured because the first and second available appointments may reflect openings created by patients canceling appointments and thus does not accurately measure true availability. So they felt like it serves as an anchor metric to more reliably reflect when the schedule actually has substantial capacity. The other questions that were asked in this brief were, systematic review or what samples or populations were studied. Not well described. Some of it was in VA, but mostly in, you know, general primary care clinics. What are the salient characteristics of local and organizational context study? Also not well described in any of these studies, but of them it was either academic affiliated clinics, the National Health Service in England, or the VA. The fourth question was, what are the key features of successful and unsuccessful interventions for organizational management of access? And all described advanced or open access, and you've all heard that, you know, in VA for many years under different monikers, but that's been a general theme that the VA has been pushing. And the last was, are relevant tested tools, toolkits, and other detailed materials available? And there are some, including VA. So Merritt Hawkins is a company that does secret shopper calls. What they basically do is every few years, they do these secret shopper telephone calls, about 10 to 15 offices in large cities. They've added metro areas recently. They go through five medical specialties. They randomly select physician names from internet-based office listings. And then the phone call is based on a new person to the community. So they have a script and they call. One of the flaws of this is if the individual physician that they called to ask for was booked out or no longer taking patients, the wait time defaulted to 1 year. So they didn't ask if somebody else in the clinic could see you. It was that physician. I think that's a problem with their methodology. But anyway, here are their findings that in large metro markets, it's about 24 days for a new appointment, and that's gone up since 2014. Mid-sized markets a little longer, about 32 days, and that's also gone up. The area with the highest wait time was Boston. I guess there's not enough physicians in Boston. So that's about 50 days, with Dallas being the lowest, and in mid-sized cities that they surveyed, Yakima, about the same 50 days, and Billings, Montana, at the low end. So their conclusion was wait times in this survey have gone up since 2004, and they say that a two-week wait is considered a tipping point to hire new providers, and a big part of what Merritt Hawkins does, and that mid-sized markets had longer wait times. finish up here, RAND recently came out with a few reports that were in the wake of the Phoenix issues and the Choice Act. And I think it's important for everybody to remember that, you know, the veteran population is declining, but the number of VA patients has increased that are getting care. And it's expected that that's going to increase till about 2019. So we've got another year and a half. And then the predictions are that it will stay level or decline. So the wait time and what they said in their report for primary care, the wait time measure used by VA, the number of days following the preferred date, makes it difficult to compare with other healthcare systems. And that's true because no other healthcare systems measure wait times that way. Most use third next available, and that's come in and out of favor in the VA over time. And if you look at the figure on the right, it gives an idea that, you know, about 83% of new primary care patients are able to get an appointment within 2 weeks. And overall, compared to Merritt Hawkins, that's much faster, and we would love to look at individual markets, but those data aren't available. One of the last things they said, and this leads right into what Adam's going to talk about, is that the VA should consider alternative strategies of timely access to care. And this is right out of the report and a main recommendation. VA should examine the utility of alternative benchmarks of timeliness, such as those related to appointment availability. VA should develop methods to routinely compare the timeliness of VA care with non-VA benchmarks and publish these comparisons for transparency. And speaking of time, time is gone. And I thought I'd have more to say, but I'm going to pass this on to Adam so he can take it from here.
Thank you. Adam, are you ready to share your screen?
I sure am.
Excellent. You should have that pop up now.
Okay. Can you see my screen?
We can. Looks good. Thank you.
All right, great. So following up Pink Floyd with Strogatz here, good morning, everybody. Thanks for attending this seminar and everybody who's tuning in later to the archives. Appreciate your time. So I'm going to get into a talk about timely care, what the MyVA access evaluation is kind of conceptualized as timely care. So brief overview of what I'm going to talk about, our goal, some necessary definitions about what SDA, same-day access versus timely care. The design and method that we're using to evaluate these metrics. And we're going to do a quick data view of what we're actually seeing in the CDW and then get into some results from our preliminary models. So our goal, so this is a busy slide, but basically our goal is to build a kind of a process where we can quickly extract information from the CDW or other data sources and model them in such a way that we can actually start to build up some kind of insight into what successful facilities are doing to implement access. So the key domains that we've kind of targeted here, we're calling patient demand. So a lot of that is enrollment growth, reliance demographics, et cetera. Facility supply, so getting into the characteristics of the facility. And staffing, so how household panels are, what the turnover rates are like within the facility. And this is really, we're setting this up to kind of work hand in hand with our site visit teams who are actually, have gone around to a lot of the clinics and interviewed some of the clinicians and GPMs to really try to find out locally what's happening. So we're kind of backing up that analysis with what we're seeing in CDW. So this is our goal. Where are we now? So let's get into some definitions. Oops. Okay, so same-day access. This is the original SDA, which when I first saw this, I thought my doc was done. It's already been defined. They've already got all of the basic units, you know, defined in simple ratio. Just the create date equals desired date equals appointment date plus walk-ins. And then divide that by those dates that the desired date equal to the create date. So very simple ratio. When I first took up this project, this was the current definition. And as we kind of started to build out the metrics, actually start to measure this, there was a revision to the MyVA Access implementation, and FDA was dropped entirely and replaced with this new concept, which they're calling timely care. So this is a long, complete definition, and I'm just going to skip through this to get to the essential ingredients here. So this is a big kind of the main points of the timely care concept. So service is focused on patient need, and how that service is provided. It can happen anywhere. That service can be provided by any clinician and by any means necessary. So basically, by any means, I mean face-to-face or CBT or secure messaging, et cetera. And there's a small caveat that says based on availability. So the based on availability, we're really trying to measure that with the staffing and facility domains that I talked about earlier. So the primary question is this concept, can it be measured in the CDW? So the short answer is yes, and we really hit the VSSC and CDW architects for a lot of information when we first got started, and they pointed us towards, of course, the appointment domain in CDW, which has all of the ingredients used in the SDA. So it has the actual scheduling request type, which tells you if the patient either walked in or they requested the next available appointment, or they requested some other appointment that's not the next available, but sometime, you know, within the next 2-3 weeks. It's also where the desire date is, so we're going to use that for established patients when we're measuring timely care or SDA. And as I go along, so I'm going to use timely care and SDA pretty much interchangeably. Just understand it to be the same thing, timely care. And then appointment main date, so those are primarily used for the new patients. So patients are considered new if they haven't been seen in the parent facility VISTA system for 24 months, or they're actually bona fide new patients. So for those, we're working on the assumption that they didn't really have an established themselves in the appointment scheduling domain, so we're using the appointment made date for that. And then to actually capture where and when the patient was seen, we looked into the utilization data. So we're looking at the outpatient workload, inpatient, fee basis, and eventually Medicare. So the 2016 Medicare just came out. We've got a request in, so we're waiting on that data, and we should have that pretty quickly. Okay, so that's getting into some of the nitty-gritty of what we are using, the CDW elements that we're using to define timely care. So now we consider this a successful fulfillment of timely care to be when a patient has a completed appointment within 48 hours from requesting next day or walking in, and that care can be received in any of the following locations. So I'm just going to walk through some examples of how that request can be fulfilled and what we are considering a success. So the patient can request next day or walk in and receive care in the same clinic stop with or without their primary PCMM provider. They can request in a clinic stop but then be seen in a different clinic stop within the same day 6A, and by day 6A I mean division. They can be seen in a different division within the same parent network or even community care, or of course via virtual. And then a failure is patient not seen within, of course, the clinic cancels. So we're going to penalize clinics who do a lot of clinic cancellations, especially for the next day requests. And then a patient seen in the emergency department or urgent care if the need is not an emergency, or if the need is emergent, but it could be treatable in primary care. And for those two last definitions, we're using the NYU EDUC classification. There's links in the appendix of this slide deck if you're interested.
Adam, I apologize for interrupting. I just had a quick clarifying question from the audience. Can you define what is meant by virtual care?
Oh, yeah, so that's any clinic video telehealth, or secure messaging is essentially what we're considering to be. Is that?
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so exclusions. The standard kind of health services exclusion, so age between 18 to 100, 100 is probably a little bit high. Death before appointment, cancellation due to them actually being in hospital at the time of the request. The patient either no-shows or they cancels, and we're excluding mobile units because we don't know how to measure those. Those are predominantly in Seattle in this data view that I'm going to show. So the key assumptions here, the data capture, of course, is timely, accurate, and complete. So the requests, we're really assuming that the schedulers and whoever's entering the data, that they're really being accurate about whether or not the patient is actually requesting next day, the walk-in, et cetera. The cancellation type, so again, assuming that, you know, the schedulers are really being accurate about who is canceling the appointment. The desired date, so when the patient or clinician wants to see the patient, we're assuming that's accurate. And of course, the visit date, when they were actually seen. And then patient needs. We're using the NOSOS from the Health Economics Resource Center as a proxy for patient needs. So it's a risk adjustment variable. And then the biggest, probably the biggest assumption in this this current concept is that the VA primary care governs treatment across both VA and non-VA. So getting into moving from the actual data model into kind of conceptualizing a more research-oriented question, are rural facilities or divisions less likely to provide primary care? And the corollary, are rural patients less likely to receive primary care? So this primary setup is really just to assess the feasibility of the data model, so how accurate the queries in ETL and how long it takes. Look into a lot of the features, so that, you know, do the standard kind of univariate, multivariate assessment of the columns that we're interested in. And then look at any, see if there really is any significant variability and at what a level what level we have the most significant variability. So here's the method. So pre-post retrospective cohorts, we're using the end of the performance incentives in June 2014 as our start point. And we're going 1 year prior, using that as a baseline year, and then we're following following everybody for 3 years after that. So standard hierarchical regression. Primary exposure is urban-rural. We get that from PSSG. If you don't know what a lot of these acronyms are, there's links in the appendix. For risk adjustment or need assessment, we're using the NOSOS from IRC. Tested random intercepts, random slopes, and then different levels of nesting, so division within parent, patient within division within parent, et cetera. And then we do a quick subset analysis in primary care and mental health. And then those are the R packages that are underpinning my work. So data view. So that's the concept. Let's actually look at what this data looks like. So I took We're actually, as part of the evaluation, we're looking at 23 parent facilities. So I took out at random three mostly rural parents, so Sioux Falls, Butler, and Iowa City, and then three urban parents, so Seattle, Chicago, Baltimore. And so we're going to look at a couple of plots of what the actual, this timely care concept looks like next. So here we got a panel plot. So the top panel is the actual parent aggregate primary care success rate. So starting in 2014, going all the way up to 2017, so you can see that there's a good amount of variability at the parent level, and they're all pretty much increasing for the most part over the time periods. And then in the bottom panel, we have the separate parents. And within the parents, we have their the divisions that are assigned to those parents, their separate timely care success rates. You can see there's extreme and significant variability within division, within parent. And it looks like the more rural facilities have a slightly better success rate. So this is looking at all possible appointment requests. So this is primary care, mental health specialty, labs, pharmacy, everything. So in total, it looks like facilities are doing pretty good, but there's parents are doing pretty good, but there's extreme variability within division. Okay, so subset within primary care. So now we only consider requests within primary care. And it looks like there's a couple of facilities that are, a couple of parents that are actually decreasing over the time period. And then, but we're still seeing the same kind of behavior within the division with the rural facilities look like they're in aggregate doing a little bit better than the urban facilities. And then last we have the mental health success rate. A little bit lower start point, and they don't really seem to be increasing that much over the time period. And what we're seeing down here is a bit of a flip where the urban divisions in aggregate seem to be doing a little bit better than the rural divisions. Okay, so that's what timely care is looking like under these definitions. Let's get into the full table one. So any health services analysis, you have to have a table one. So here we have the patients, total patients in our 23 divisions, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. It's about a million patients, or about 20% of the entire PCMM population in any year. I'm just going to check the time here. On average, the population is around 63, predominantly male, of course, predominantly white, and then about 34% rural population throughout the time period. So table 1B now is just the people who are making next day requests or walking in. So it's about half of our sample population in any year. They're a little bit younger and a little bit more diverse, so 74 versus 80% white. And they're a heck of a lot more urban, so 70 versus 62 to 73 versus 65. And also their risk scores are a bit higher. So the distribution is a little bit wider, too. So that's what the population of people making same day requests and walking in looks like. It's a little bit younger, a little bit more urban, a little bit more racially diverse. So here's our exclusion table. So we started with about 1.5 million requests in the 23 divisions, or 23 parents over every year. And in the end, we end up excluding about 10 to 11% of all these due to the reasons I stipulated above. And we're still working on a lot of these exclusions. It's kind of a work in progress here. So, and obviously, these exclusions aren't mutually excluded. So a lot of the people who are actually inpatient and making same-day requests, they'll be canceled in the CDW. So you'll have, you know, both an inpatient exclusion and appointment cancel exclusion. So these are not mutually exclusive. So fulfillment. So where these people are making the same day requests or walking in, where are they actually doing that? Where are they receiving care? So for the most part, for all requests, they're being treated in other places outside of primary care and mental health. So this VA other is VA specialty. Could be labs, could be pharmacy, could be anything except VA primary care and VA mental health. So on average, in any year, you're seeing about 70% fulfillment in specialty, non-primary care. In primary care, you're seeing about 20% fulfillment on average throughout the year. Mental health is doing about 6 to 7. VA inpatients doing 2%. That's gone up, almost doubled. And then fee inpatient, so that's around 1%, 2%. It's also increasing. And then fee outpatient, so again, 2% or so of all visits. And then in the last year here, so we're running into that that problem with the missing choice data in the fee basis domain, which I have a link in the notes to the OIG report, which gets into details on that. So the cells that are missing here is Medicare. So really would like to look to see, you know, given the age of the population, what type of, you know, fulfillment they're receiving in Medicare, if any. Okay, so here's here the model results. So we're considering a linear hierarchical regression in the first table. And then just to be complete, I'm including also the logistic results for those of you thinking probability scale. So the first table, linear, so as you go down the rows, that denotes which level of aggregation we're considering for our random effect. So the first row is a random intercept, random slope for parents. The second row is random intercept, random slope for state 5A. And then the last two rows are subset analysis. So random intercept, random slope within A 5A for primary care and then for mental health. So as you can see, on average, we're starting at about 70, 75 to 85%, the small positive time trend. And for rural, so rural here we're saying is the proportion of veterans who are classified rural within these levels of aggregation. So this right here would be the proportion of rural veterans within state 5A. So there's a little bit of a negative effect for divisions with higher proportions of rural veterans. And then the no cells is small but positive, which you would expect. So patients with higher risk tend to get have a higher SDA rate. Excuse me. Hang on a second.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, sorry to stop. Throat's a little dry, sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Okay. So,
we do have another, I'm sorry, we do have another clarifying question before we get going.
Okay.
Can you let us know what is included in other? Is that specialty, emergency department?
This one, right? Yeah, so that would be anywhere. So if it was emergency department, it would have to have been classified as truly emergent. So prior to running this table, we exclude anyone using the NYU algorithm who was truly emergent. So there could be EDUC in there, but only if it was truly emergent, they couldn't be treated anywhere else. Does that make sense?
Great, thank you.
So these, I mean, the fixed effects, sure, they're interesting, but the best part about these models is the random effects, of course. So we can go in, as you can see, the bulk of these are not significantly different from zero, but we don't, in average, we're not really interested in those. What we're interested in are these guys down here seem to have, they have a low kind of negative effect for their start point, and they're also struggling to increase their timely care over time. So the idea now is to take out these facilities in the tails and hone in on them, pull out as much information as we can to feed into the site visit team so that they've got a good kind of assessment of what is happening in the facility as they roll out their analysis also. So those kind of troubled divisions, we're going to pull into this full data model, pull in all their enrollment rates, patient demographics, facility characteristics, complexity, et cetera, and work on kind of a joint analysis of what the site visit teams are seeing. So that's where we're headed right now. The ideal system. So the ideal system for timely care, the first touch, so the people who are accepting what the patient needs, that has to be spot on. One way we could perhaps, increase our accuracy there is utilizing wearable tech or even developing some better predictive analytics to kind of anticipate need and what the patient actually might need before they even need it, right? I mean, that's kind of the new push with a lot of the IBM Watson and Google deep learning approaches to healthcare analysis. We really need accurate timestamps. So currently we're working with this desired date versus clinically indicated date. We really need to separate, like, who is making the request? Is it the clinic or is it the patient? And then also, I think we need to do a little bit of a patient education, make sure that the patient knows where and how they can access services. So, I mean, do they need to come into the medical center, or can they be seen at the neighborhood drugstore to get that flu shot? Okay. And then ideally, clinic staff, of course, are educated to the condition of the patient prior to arrival. And then others. So this is really a work in progress. So if you have any comments or questions, please enter those into the chat box. And then that's it. Thanks, everybody.
Excellent. Well, thank you both. We do have several pending questions, so we'll get right to them. If anyone joined us after the top of the hour and is looking to submit a question or comment, you can do so in writing using your GoToWebinar control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Just click the arrow sign next to the word questions. That will expand the dialog box, and you can then type your question or comment in there. The first one came in. Would this include telephone appointments and unscheduled interactions with patients or services to patients?
That's a great question. So, I mean, we're really assuming with this model, we're really assuming that all appointments are captured in the appointment domain. So for that kind of interaction, unless whoever, instigated the call went into CPRS and entered that, we wouldn't know about it. But hopefully the site visit teams will be able to kind of take the temperature on how often that happens, and then we can potentially add that to the information about the division.
Thank you. The next question, does patient need mean from the time, I'm sorry, give me one second. Does patient need mean from the patient's perspective? In other words, this isn't a determination based on objective clinical need.
Well, in a sense, right now, since we're using the NOSOS, it's based on, which is a regression, which includes several elements captured from the diagnostic ICD-10, ICD-9 codes. It also includes pharmacy utilization, total costs. So in a sense, we're not even really considering what the patient perceives as their need. We're using a kind of well-proven measure of patient risk as a proxy for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is Peter. I'm going to answer that another way, too. I think that's a great question about what is the need and who determines it, when we talk about timely care. And in the there's some proposed legislation called the Veterans Coordinated Access and Rewarding Experience Program, or CARE. And the CARE program is supposed to be sort of the next version of CHOICE if it's passed by Congress. But basically what they say, and I'm reading from a summary that says, in marked contrast to the Veterans Choice Program, the CARE program is designed to rely on the clinical assessment, in parentheses, or in italics, the clinical assessment of each veteran by a primary health care professional in the VHA to assign the eligibility of a veteran for community-based care. And I think the reason that's relevant with this discussion of timely care is, you know, who makes that decision? Is it just that, is it the 40-mile and 30-day rule? Is it patient-driven? Is it provider-driven? And I think the intent here is to make it sort of an informed patient-provider interaction, but ultimately it's the provider that decides what's the medical need. And if somebody needs to get care faster than the VA can provide, they can get it in the community. And we need to have a way to measure that.
Thank you both. Next question. Was your work initiated by OVAC?
Peter, you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, so, and that's a good question. And I did, just for the sake of time at the beginning, I didn't give too much background on some of this. So some of this work is funded by the Office of Rural Health in collaboration with the Office of Veterans Access to Care, OVAC. And this came in the wake of, you know, the Phoenix issues and then the establishment of the MyVA Access Initiative to improve access in VA. And probably many of you are on the phone, you know, were involved with that and the development of the group practice manager model, the GPMs. And so part of our role is to assess access using the existing metrics that we have and propose new metrics that can be incorporated into the current metric system that we use in the VA so that we have better ways to say, you know what, our access is pretty good and here is objective data to show it, or identify areas where access is not good or at least areas that we could improve on.
Thank you. The next question. Will this include primary care? Oh, you might have already touched on this, but we'll see. Will this include primary care provided through VA choice or community care?
Yes, it does. So, I mean, up to at least up until quarter four 2015, when the lump sum payment started happening with choice. So, up until then, yes, we do include fee basis. If you want additional details, I would highly recommend that you read the OIG reports that just came out regarding the choice implementation and data capture.
Thank you. The next question. Are these patients making same-day requests or merely requests for an appointment?
Yeah, so they are classified as making next-day requests or they walk into a clinic. Predominantly, these are walk-ins. Walk-ins have doubled over the last several years. We're hearing anecdotal information on the ground that patients are being told to basically just walk in whenever they need something. So, by and large, we're modeling walk-ins here.
Yeah, and I can comment more on that in terms of the role that walk-ins have, and I'm sure every single person on this call has their own opinion about it, you know, and the value of having carve-out slots and, you know, starting the day with open slots, you know, but that's balanced against, you know, criticism later for having wasted slots. So, you know, one hand is telling you, well, have open slots in the morning so that people can walk in. And, you know, by the end of the day, if they're not filled, it's like, well, you wasted these slots. Why didn't you fill them? So, I think this whole walk-in issue is a challenge for everybody. You know, in a perfect world, you know, people that model this say, well, you should get to the point where anybody can walk in at any time and be seen, and you perfectly match supply and demand. You know, the problem with that is that, you know, supply and demand are not, you know, static over time. Your supply can change if a provider leaves or, you know, people are on vacation, and demand can go up or down based on holidays and weekends and flu seasons and things like that. So we don't live in that perfect world, but, you know, we want to balance the ability for people to walk in for, you know, semi-urgent needs versus just walking in anytime for routine care and then expecting somebody to see them in 15 minutes.
Thank you. Next question. Did these appointments include provider telephone contacts with patients?
Yes.
Thank you. It still seems strange to me that 70% of successful timely care was delivered outside of primary care. How is that possible when specialty has far less availability than primary care?
Well, there's more utilization outside of at least clinic stop wise. So keep in mind we're measuring clinic stops here. So any classification that's not primary care, so that includes, you know, lab visits, pharmacy draws, all those kind of, you know, day-to-day deluge of clinic stop visits just overwhelms the count of primary care visits.
Yeah, and for lack of a better term, I mean, it's a touch with the patient. I mean, they've touched the system or the system's touched them in some way. And so we know there's been contact, you know, and that may or may not have met the need that they have, or it may start the, you know, the ball rolling. I mean, a lab visit may be, you know, the first step in whatever the same day need was.
Thank you.
I think that is, I'll add on to that. I mean, that's unique about, you know, the VA and our ability to measure. I mean, we can measure all the different ways that people connect with the system. And, you know, we don't know yet whether adding on more ways for them to contact us, whether it be through secure messaging, you know, text messaging, phone calls, you know, other forms of apps, you know, where people can just, you know, use another form to contact the system. Does that improve their access overall? You know, does it triage people to the right access? You know, or does it just create more care? I mean, it may just be that, you know, if you make it too easy for people to get care, they get more care than they need.
Thank you. Forgive me if I mispronounce this statistic word. What is the Bayesian probability or reasonable expectation for timely care? It will never be 100%, but what is a reasonable expectation?
Great question. I would say, I mean, if you just look at, you look at how in total when I run all these facilities, it looks like everybody's regressing towards this mean of about 84% within primary care. I haven't looked at mental health yet, but I think that's probably the upper limit, plus or minus about 2-3% on how successful this entire system can be at providing same day access.
Yeah, and I think that is the $1 million question. You know, because if you create a metric, you know, you got to give somebody or give, you know, the system, you know, benchmarks of what's considered sort of adequate response or adequate, you know, performance, you know, and what's considered really good performance. I mean, you know, having it be 100% is not reasonable. Reminds me of a study that was done looking at parents, because it was a pediatric study, parents calling into like a nurse triage line about, you know, a question that they had after hours for their child. And when the nurse triage line told them to go to the emergency room for whatever the problem was, 25% of the time they still didn't go. So people make choices about different things. So they were told to access the system by a healthcare professional and still didn't access it. So I don't think you can ever have 100%.
Thank you. In the modeling and models, have you considered the use of non-regression models such as system dynamics?
I'm not familiar with system dynamics. I did consider doing a GAM model, but we're not really interested in, coming out with the most insanely accurate prediction model we can. We're really trying to come up with a concept, a way to analyze it that's easy to interpret and kind of disseminate to decision makers.
Thank you. We do have a couple comments that came in. Pardon me. One is a recommendation for an article that Dr. Shulkin wrote, and that can be found in Politico magazine. So you can just, just Google VA David Shulkin Politico magazine, and you can find that there. It's titled Trump Veterans Affairs VA David Shulkin. And we have another comment that came in. Can I suggest someone asking panels of patients to help define what timely care means to them? I mean, sometimes when I call for an appointment, I am in pain or feel acutely ill and want to be seen that day. Other times, I want to follow up with primary care, and I'm satisfied with 7 days. Other times, I need specialty care, and I'm satisfied with 2 to 4 weeks, depending on how concerned I am. Maybe if we could ask the patient which category they feel like they're in and record that, it would be more meaningful.
Yeah, totally agree. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Adam, and then I'll follow up.
Well, I was going to say the first touch is crucial, right? So that the preliminary assessment of what patient needs, that's like irreplaceable.
Yeah, and there is some work going on right now to get at that, and it's going back to what I mentioned at the beginning, this whole concept of perceived access. And are you meeting the need of the patient? Somebody at one point may feel like getting their toenails, cut, is an absolute emergency. They've put it off too long and they want it done today. And that's their perception. It's probably not medically indicated, but that's their perception. There's a group led by Jeff Pine in Little Rock who's developing a perceived access inventory. So it's basically a scale to, get a sense of patients, what is their perceived need for care. The primary focus is on mental health, but as they study this better and sort of refine their methods, our hope is to be able to use that in primary care, specialty care, procedures, urgent care. So you get an idea from the patient's perspective what they feel is appropriate access. I can tell you one other thing we were looking at yesterday was just the wait time data through the SHEP or CAPS data through SHEP saying that actually veterans look over the last year, their wait times that they perceive have gone down. The time that they sit in the waiting room has gone down. That's how they feel. That's great. That's a good sign.
Thank you. The next question, where can we find the OIG reports?
You can just Google OIG VA Choice. It came out in, January, I believe, of this year, December last or January this year. I believe I have a link in the slides. If you downloaded the slides, I have a link on the slide with the table.
Thank you. Do you have an estimate of the proportion of successful FDA were not face-to-face, for example, virtual?
I haven't actually, built a slicer for that, but we could relatively easily do that. We should do that.
Yeah, thanks for the suggestion.
Thank you. Are more site visits scheduled?
No, we did 22 site visits, and the analysis of that work is going on right now, and we'll have some data start to come out over the next few months. We do have a request into the Office of Management Budget for doing 50 veteran interviews, and this gets back at, you know, your question about the patient's perceptions. And, you know, we're hoping that through a series of interviews from veterans from the sites that we visited, we can start to get at what their perceptions are. And I think that's really important. You know, when you have events like Phoenix and other bad press that hits the airways, you know, it has a negative effect on people's perceptions. You know, but when you get at the data looking at the current veterans who seek care in the VA, you know, their satisfaction with care is very high. So there's a bit of a disconnect. So we want to get to know better what the veterans think.
Thank you. The next question we have, many of these factors that are modeled seem to interact with one another, such as rurality. Will you consider modeling these interactions in the future?
Yeah, definitely. So part of the standard modeling procedure, so we look at, you know, interactions, squared, square roots, all kinds of stuff. But we wanted to just keep, for this display, this presentation, just keep a simple kind of just additive effects currently.
Excellent. Well, that is the final pending question at this time, but I would like to give each of you the opportunity to make any concluding comments you would like. Dr. Kaboli, we can start with you.
I just want to say thanks for everybody. You can contact Adam or myself if you have other suggestions or ways that we can do this better. I mean, we don't have it all figured out yet, and hopefully over the next 6 months to a year, we can have a better metric that we believe can measure timely care. Adam?
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely a work in progress. So if you have any comments or suggestions, please do feel free to email me or Peter. And, yeah, thanks again for showing up.